Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I'm Mike. I'm a real compulsive overeater. And I'm going to tell you, I've got a picture, and people don't believe it, to pass around. It's a tradition that, there's a sign that says, don't go past this point on the picture, and I did. So I came to OA February 5th, 2009. I came in and I was abstinent from the first day I came to meetings. I've been into another 12-step meeting and I have not broke my abstinence in that time. I've got a lot of unclean things with my food that we didn't consider abstinent that day. So July, 5 years ago, I feel like I really joined this program. And I'll tell you a little bit about what that was like for me. I shouldn't say it's the first time I came into OA. 12 years before that, I came into OA at that time, too, and I spent 6 months in OA, but I never surrendered. I did step one. I never did the work. I lost a lot of weight because I've always known how to diet, but don't consider myself in the program, so I don't say that as my start. But to be fully honest, that I did give it a try and had 12 years of binging afterwards. I gain and lose usually around 100 and 125 pounds at the time. When I came to OA in 2009, I lost 100 pounds in 4 months. And I was an anorexic at that time, I believe, and just changed sides of the coin. But it was really interesting for me to see because I've always thought it's just been about the food. And so as long as I could put a front in front of myself and say, this is what I look like on the inside, that was a total lie, I was good. People would tell me, oh, you have this wonderful spiritual program, because I'd share in meetings about prayer and 10-step stuff. I did 10-step probably once every 3 months. And it was a dishonest place. And I went to a retreat, an AA Al-Anon retreat up in the mountains in 5 years ago. Whenever that was, and I heard a speaker talk from the podium that told my story, and I broke into tears, and that's when I had my first spiritual awakening, was to hear the truth about me said from somebody else, and my program changed at that time. I'm the kind of guy that comes into a program, and I did my eating plan. I did what I was told when I liked to do it. If I didn't like what the sponsor told me, I fired him and got a new sponsor. I was large and in charge. As long as I could make people think things were good in my head. Somebody answered the four impediments of connecting with God, and I said, well, number one's got to be my brain. Because if I live in my brain, I'm dead. And that's where 10, 11, and 12 come in place for me. My first thought when I was asked to speak is I got to do this every day for at least a month and a half because I got to do it perfectly before I can talk about it. So I did 3 days in a row, and that ended. And then I went to the mountains, and I went to the OA convention that was up in the mountains a few weeks ago, and I had another spiritual awakening. I heard a woman talk about 10, 11, and 12 up there and how she lived it, and I heard things that I had never heard when I read the books. I've been through the work in the books. I got my sobriety through the OA literature. I think it doesn't really matter how you do this gig. It's how God comes into you and does it. I believe the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the exact instructions, and I think it's easier to get to the truth through that. But I think people can get their truth any way they want to do it. So I don't have a horse in the race of how this is done. Another thing that happened to me just recently, I was playing golf with a buddy and he said he hated somebody. And I said, that's interesting, I don't hate anybody. And that's true for me at that moment and is today. And he said, you can't be human. If you're human, you have to hate somebody. I said, okay. I didn't have to get in the debate club about it. I didn't have to talk about my program. I just had to say, you know, that's you might be right. Let me hit the ball. And I think I hit it well too. So that time, a lot of other times I didn't. So anyway, we're gonna talk about this. And where I am right now is I usually don't use the word recovered, and because there's this big debate that I hear from people about recovering versus recovered, and what we read in the 10th, 11th, and 12th step really talks about how you can be recovered, and what recovery is. And also about that you have to be, it's a day-by-day reprieve. So I just usually say I'm a compulsive overeater and don't get into that, but that will be part of what I talk about. I also don't have notes except what's in the big book. I just kind of go through this, and I don't practice before I come because I ask God to be talk through me and not me talk through me. I love the set-aside prayer, and I'm just going to say it for all of us. And just like everything in OA, mine's a little different than what was shared earlier, but it's God, please enable me to set aside everything I know for an open mind and a new experience. Help me to see the truth about this book, about the meetings, the 12 steps, and my disease. So in step 10, it suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And it says we vigorously commence this. At the end of step 9, it says we're going to do more action. And my belief is, and the other thing I have to say is, what I'm saying is my interpretation of the book and what my sponsors taught me, and there may be disagreements about what I'm saying. Take what you like and leave the rest, as long as you've got something that you believe it comes from in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. What I do with my sponsees is when we finish step 9, step 8, and start step 9, they start doing 10, 11, and 12. They don't have to finish all their amends, because if they did, I still have one amendment left from when I first came to program. A woman that I can't say broke up with. I left abandoned. I mean, I just took off and didn't say we weren't dating anymore. And I wouldn't be able to do 10, 11, and 12 if that, or nobody would have taught me that. And so sometimes it takes us a long time to get all those amends as we find those people, no matter how painstakingly diligent we are in trying to locate with them. And we have to wait for God to bring them into our life. So I believe my sanity, my sobriety rests in 10, 11, and 12. And that's what the book says. And so I start my sponsees right away. So anyway, first of all, it says then that we are going to continue taking personal inventories. And to me, that's continually doing step 4. And I believe to write it down. I don't have people call me and talk off the cuff about their step 4. I ask them to write the 4 columns down. And the book also says that the fear is the thread that goes all the way through all our resentments and our dishonesties and those things that we write about in that inventory. So I do a 4th step, the 4 columns, and then I do the 3 column fear inventory. And when anybody does step 10s with me. And so basically in step 4 we look for the same thing: selfishness, dishonesty, resentments, and fear. And then the order of the things we're supposed to do is in a little different order when they write about it in step 10. I thought about this a lot. And the one thing Bill W. did when he wrote this book is he had learned how to write from somebody that says use different words to say different things. So he has several different ways that talks about the psychic change, the spiritual change, the reborn that we have, the birth that we have doing the steps. And so I'm not sure that we have to change the order of the way we look at things. Clearly, if people like to do that, it's okay with me. I mean, I don't really care one way or the other. But for me, I just go back to the original 4-step when we're doing that. And then we discuss that with another person. And then we make amends as quickly as possible. The miracle of this for me is when I do routinely do the 10th, 11th step, and I kind of talk about them together, and they are two separate things. But when I do the 10th, 11th step, I don't have to do much phone calling to people. I don't have to write much inventory. And it has been a long time since I've made an amend, because, and we'll talk why of that when we get into step 11. I believe that as we do this work, the first premise is if you've done 1 through 9, you're recovered. You've had a spiritual awakening. And so what steps 10 and 11 are about is keeping that spiritual awakening and to continue to grow in a conscious contact with the God of your understanding. Now, I use the term God. The God of my understanding is not a Judeo-Christian God. The God of my understanding, I actually have him tattooed, or her, or it, on my shoulder. Got that when I turned 70. But it's really about that opening up that conduit. And I've had some weird things in my life around my program. I used to talk about the way I wrote inventory was, it was the NCIS model of inventory. And that's that, I don't know if any of you ever watched that TV show. It's that the guy that's the head of the NCIS always smacked this one guy in the back of the head when he did something wrong. And then I found, to my dismay, that I didn't understand this earlier. There's a lot of us, and I'm one of them, that have been abused as we've been kids in program or that kind of stuff, and physical actions like that can be really repulsive, and it takes away what I'm trying to say when I say that. What I really think it is it's a conduit of spring water. And we have this pipe that runs directly from me to God. And what happens is if I let resentments, if I let fears, if I let dishonesty get in there, it's like twigs get stuck in that conduit and the flow gets cut off. So the idea of the 10th step and the 11th step is to connect with God, not to do less work. The other thing I thought about when I was in program is I thought it was just checking the boxes. All I had to do was get up in the morning, say, pray, hi, God. I'm going to meditate. It's over in 2 minutes. I'm good. I'm ready to go to work. And that's all I needed to do, and I was doing it. And I have this phrase that will probably be offensive to some people, but I'm going to say it anyway. And I used to try to make God my bitch. I used to say to God, God, I'm going to do these things, and then you have to give me what I want. And it wasn't about me having a relationship with my higher power. It was about me getting what I wanted out of God. And the book says that we're praying for our own needs, it ain't going to happen. It's wasted time. And that's what I did. I sat in this place in my life where I showed myself as being perfect to everyone around me, and all I was a mess inside. And so I had what I called, I'd stand up and said, well, I asked today, but my eating plan's a little iffy, you know. Well, yeah, I gained 25 pounds during those iffy eating plans, but I was still absent because I did not eat my alcoholic foods. But I wasn't connected with God. And what I've learned now is the first sign of not being connected is I look at something and I want it. If I go through a restaurant and somebody's got a dessert on their table and I go, oh, that looks good, that's not good. That's me, it's God saying, Mike, there's something going on. You need to go look at what it is. I had a sponsor who once said to me, don't look. If it isn't bothering you, don't look for it. And I do believe that if I don't look for it, if I don't pay attention to the messages that God's giving me, then I am going to get stronger messages. It is pain that brings me to my knees to look at things. And I will receive enough pain that I will drop to my knees and then I'll do the work. If I listen to intuition, if I listen to my food, if I look at those things, then I don't have to wait for God to finally give me enough pain to do stuff. I look at it and start doing it. I also, the book talks about outside sources, therapy, you know, being on antidepressants if you're depressed, those kinds of things. And I believe that that's absolutely true. I do therapy. I do my own work around that because I believe that that's how I get in touch with some things that I have to turn over to God. My wife is a therapeutic hypnotist. And so I do hypnotherapy that goes down and gets to places that I can't touch with my feeble brain. And so I get aware of those things and then I get a chance to work on them. And that's been really helpful for me doing that. But that's outside this program. That's just something that I'd like to say because I think it's important that whatever path people take besides the 12 steps that helps them get in touch with God, whether it's the specific religion you have, whether it's rooting for the Broncos, you know, whatever thing you choose to do is your choice in this program because we can go to outside sources. The other thing it says in the book is this continues for a lifetime. And that means just that. When I'm going to read the 10th step promises when I finish this, and at the end of the promises it says as long as we remain spiritually fit. And spiritually fit, remaining spiritually fit is doing 10, 11, and 12. And that's how I believe I have to act and what I have to do to keep that conduit with God open and to stay spiritually fit. Okay, here I'm going to go ahead and read the 12-step promises. And I actually wish we read these more in meetings than we do. But it is, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in a fit spiritual condition. When I first came to program, I would walk into the snack room, whatever you want to call it, my office, and there would always be sugar there. And one of my alcoholic foods is sugar. And I would walk into the room, and as I was going into the door, my sponsor told me to say, "God, it's not my food." And so I walked into that room with a prayer in my heart, and I think that's how I, through grace, through the pink cloud, whatever we want to call it, when I was first starting to do the work, that's how I stayed away from my alcoholic foods. Today I can walk in. I took my grandkids to a place, and if the book also says that we can talk about food, we can talk about alcohol, we can go to bars, and if we're recovered, it should not be an issue for us. If it is an issue, then it means that we need to do some more work around the steps. So I do talk about food, and I hope it doesn't offend anybody. But I took my kids to an ice cream shop where they do slab stuff like that, because that's where they wanted to go. I was in there for 5 minutes, and I said, and they're 13 and 9, and I just left and said, you guys go and get what you want and come and tell me how much it is. And because I was getting sick to my stomach with the smell of that ice cream. And that's a gift from God. Mm-hmm. That's neutrality. That's this promise is coming true. I wish I could say that all the 9-step promises were mine. A lot of them are, but, you know, I'm married, so sometimes you have to write inventory. And I love her dearly, but that doesn't mean we never fight or we never have problems. So I'm going to kind of break it up. Is there any questions about step 10? The other thing, step 10 says that when these come up, we do it immediately and we call somebody immediately. Says later on, quickly. My belief that if you're writing inventory at midnight and you're my sponsee, do not call me at midnight. Immediately can be the next morning. I think it just then. But if you're about to take your first bite and it's midnight, call me, or call someone, because I don't want to hear about somebody's binge after they started. You know, I want to hear about it before it starts. Because usually if you're about to take something into your mouth that's not good for you, that is an alcoholic food for you, it's because you need to do inventory. And if we can work on that part of it before you get to that point, then we're going to keep you from having a relapse. And when I say we, it's me talking for God. And that brings us to step 11. So first of all, are there any questions on step 10? Is anybody? Yes, sir.
I know you said you don't spend a lot of time with 10 steps now, but earlier, did you find that there were some days where you were just in a bad place, different things, or the day was, for all practical purposes, 10 steps or something along those lines?
When I was honest with myself, yes. I think it's my wife says I live with my head in the sand, that I'm an ostrich, and my denial can be so big that I don't pay attention to things. But then they will build until I have to do it. And I there are days, and recently I had something go on in my life. I'm not going to share the specifics of it, but I was on the phone to multiple people that day. As I kept writing, I kept talking, and it wasn't going. My feelings weren't going away around it, and I felt myself going into a deep depression. And my history too is I spent 30 days in a psychiatric facility over food. I quit eating, and I did it through a book. And the pain of not having food to push things down with became so real, I was suicidal. And so I felt that same way when this happened. And so I reached out to program, and I did writing, and I did it until somebody could sit down with me, and I got some relief. And you have days like that. And my experience is the newer you are to finishing the work and giving a spiritual leap, the more you are aware of that. And it's certainly better to write it than to let it sit on the side of the table and build up, because it will keep you from taking that first bite. Anything else? So the next thing it says, it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. And that's what I did. And that's also what leads us up to binging, is that we say, I got it. I'm good. You know, it's the same alcoholic mind that tells me when I would diet in previously the program that I could lose 125 pounds and I could say, oh, I can have this time. It's going to be different. And that's the same thing that says, I'm good. I don't have to go to the meetings. You know, I do 2 meetings a week. I don't do a vision for you. I like to sleep. And so I don't do that thing. I shouldn't say that thing, because I hear really wonderful recovery out of people that do. But I do what I do. But I don't do less than 2 meetings a week, because I find that that's what works for me. When I don't do 2 meetings a week, I start getting squirrely in my brain. When I miss doing my 10th and 11th step, I get squirrely in my brain. So and I love meditation. Interesting story. Probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I was going to my Thursday night meeting that I used to go to. I don't do that specific meeting anymore. And one of the women there is a really strong meditator. And she says, it was in November, and she says, it's 11-step month. We're going to do 11-step. We're going to meditate tonight. Do anybody want to learn how to meditate? I said, no, you got to be crazy. I don't do that. Now I do a lot of meditation, but it's the big book doesn't. That's the big book talks about prayer and meditation. But when it describes our meditation, it's actually looking at what the day looks like for us to sit in the morning and say, okay, what's going on in this day? Where am I? Where is there liable to be a problem for me? Do I have a meeting I'm going to? Is there somebody I have an appointment with, or I have something going on where I don't like them? Or is there something sticking up in my craw that might come up? And so it says. So anyway, if we let our program lapse, we are headed for trouble, because alcohol is a subtle foe, and that's getting back to that issue of recovered or recovering. Because even as a recovered man, if I don't continue to stay connected with my higher power and work my program, alcohol is a subtle foe. I'm gonna be screwed. And so that's what it's talking about. So it is, my recovery is one day at a time. Some days 1 minute at a time. So what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will be done, not mine. These are the thoughts, and wait, I'm sorry, page 85 for people if anybody wants to follow. These are the thoughts which must go on constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the willpower. And step 10 and 11 are the first places that it says we can make decisions on our own. And I still, any big decision, I call my sponsor and I talk about it. I don't trust my alcoholic mind to make decisions that are substantial for my life without having somebody listen to what I have to say and see if the squirrels are loose or if they're not. We shouldn't be shy on the matter of prayer. And it talks in here about how religious people have proven that prayer works, and that we should listen and see what they do, even if we don't have a religion of ourselves. Then, if we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with one person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? That's not a 10-step inventory. And I used to be confused about that. I thought it was all 11-step. I didn't know what the hell the 10th step was. But what that is reviewing our day. The 10th step has us looking at our day as we live our day. So that's what we're reviewing it from. So what I do now is thank goodness for cell phones. I have an alarm that goes off every 2 hours, and it has four initials on it: resentful, dishonest, fearful, whatever the other one is. That's why I need it. Self-seeking, self-pity. Anyway, selfish is what it is. Anyway, that I do that because it reminds me to look at my day. And it reminds me to say what's going on right now. And if something is, then that means it's something I have to inventory. And I write it down. I may not have time at that moment in time to write an inventory, but I will that evening. And I will get it done that day. And so when we're doing the 11th step, we're saying, is there something we should have written inventory done? Have we done it? Have we picked up the phone and called anybody? You know, have we done the things that we need to do? You know, have we been helpful to others? Have we been kind? You know, and then it talks about turning our mind to someone else to help. And Bill W. proved that that's the way he kept sober. When you look at Bill W.'s story, he was in the hotel, and he chose to pick up and call a pastor instead of going in and having a drink in the gay bar. And so there's evidence that if we turn ourselves to help others, and we'll talk about that more in the 12th step. So then we usually complete that after we've done that. That's when we meditate. And before I meditate, I ask, or my entrance into meditation, I ask God to enter into my body. And I ask, I ask to be connected to Mother Earth. And I ask that God give me intuition as I meditate and as it carries me into the day. The other thing that we don't talk very much about in the 11th step, and I don't know where we are time-wise. We're okay. Where we talk about it, the 11th step is the pause. And the pause is something that's very important to me in this, and that's that when we become agitated, before something happens, I shut my mouth, and I pause, and I don't jump into that conversation, just like my friend on the golf course. I paused. Now, if I'm resentful, I have to write a 10-step inventory. Because I paused and I didn't say anything, all that means is I don't have to make an amend. It doesn't say anything about that wasn't a squirrel in my brain trying to get loose. And I used to think, if I paused, I can think all the bad things I want about the SOB in my head, but because I didn't say anything, it didn't really count. That doesn't work for me. If it's in my head, I think the book says real or imagined when we talk about resentments. And if it's in my head, it's in my imaginations, it's still real. I don't make amends and said, I was really mad at you the other day and almost swore at you, because that's not good for them. And it might make me feel a little bit better, but it's not going to make me more sober or allow me to be sober. The other thing we do is then we also remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show. And so every time that alarm goes off on my phone, I do a small prayer of God, let me allow you to be in charge today and follow your will, not mine. And I've been doing that for 2 weeks, and every day for 2 weeks, which I can brag about because you know about how I like to say things like that. But what has done is that I don't even think at work about being telling somebody how to do their job. I don't think about work at telling the manager about what needs to be fixed next. None of that stuff is going through my head because I'm not in charge. And if I ask God to be in charge on that periodic basis, it's the same relief I got when I asked God to be in charge when I walked into that room of food. God gives me the gift. And it's nothing I've earned. It's nothing I'm checking boxes for. It's that God, my higher power, gives me the ability to be closer to him or her or it. And when I am there, it's a nice place to live. I drove all the way from Aurora, Colorado to Colorado Springs, and I didn't swear at one driver. That is a miracle. I had a guy drive by me about 90 miles an hour, and that would have scared me to death, and I would have been all over what I thought about him when he drove by me. And then another guy behind him, because they were racing. And all I did was say, must have an important meeting. That didn't come out of my mouth. You know, and so this book works. It works not only about food. And I don't believe the issue is food. So I don't believe the issue for me is food. Food is just the choice that my disease took for what I tried to do to put down the pain and the hole and whatever there is there for my disease. And what I have now to do that with is God's power. And that's what we come here for. We come here for the power to not eat, the power to not be crazy, the power to not be hospitalized for mental illness, the power to have an argument with my wife and the next day be able to get up in the morning or before I go to bed at night and say, I was wrong, I should not have done that, and pick up the phone and talk to my sponsor and write inventory about it. And that's what we're looking about. The last step is the 12th step. Working with others, what we call the service. I think the principle is service. Nowhere in this step, does it say that means that we have to be in intergroup or we have to be doing anything of service inside our organization. That is the gift that you find on yourself. And I have done service out in a higher level, and I found it very sickening for me in my head because I am a power freak. And I do not need a position of power in this program. I choose my service in the process of sponsoring. Got it. What I found is that that's my disease, and I haven't been relieved of that part of my disease yet. I just think of thanks for people that provide service in putting meetings like this together. Like the meeting we had up in the mountains that keep intergroup, that we would not survive as a program without intergroup and region and the central office. So I don't mean to say that shouldn't be done. What this talks about is what Bill said in working with others, is that we are in a place where I'll find the spot. I like to work. Basically, it says if I find the first page of this, it says its practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as the intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when our other activities fail. This is our 12th step. Carry the message to other alcoholics. And what I find it for me is when I'm taking somebody through the work, I'm going through the work. I ask people when I take them through the work, I said, one of the things you have to promise me before you start this work is you're going to sponsor. Because the only way that we bring sobriety and this program to other people is to raise our hand in a room and say we sponsor. I have 7 sponsees right now. My wife said I had to stop at 6. I took another one. We're still married. But I just, somebody else talked to me just a few minutes ago about, you know, this, not a lot of men sponsors in Colorado Springs, and could I sponsor somebody? And I said, no. I said, they can call me. I'll be happy to talk to people. There are some men I know in Denver that might have room for more sponsees. But it's, to be of service in sponsoring also means to me that we have to be able to have time for the sponsor to do it right. And I have to live a balanced life. I have a responsibility to be a good husband, to be a good grandfather, I'm still employed, and to be a good employee. And I can't do all those things if I just say yes to every sponsee. So what I've been taught by my sponsor is when I'm asked, I pray about it and then answer. And right now, the other thing I generally don't do is when somebody gives me a sponsee and says, I want to have this person call you, I'll talk to them, but I don't say yes to sponsoring anybody unless the person themselves asks me. But my sobriety is very, very keyed to working with other people. And I tell you this, sometimes somebody calls me and I go, oh, I really don't want to take this call right now, but I do. There's no perfection in being a sponsor. There's no perfection in any of this. And all a sponsor is somebody that's been through the work before you. They need to be recovered. And the only qualification my sponsees have is we talk before I take them. They have to be a real compulsive overeater. It means they have to experience the phenomenon of craving, and they have experienced the twist of the mind, and they are willing to stop. And if they do those 3 things, then I will work with them. And they say they don't know about being willing to stop. We're going to do the doctor's opinion and do some work in the first 3 steps and then see if they're willing to stop. But I don't believe I can take anybody through that's in the food. I think it fogs our mind. So at that, that's kind of really quick for 12 because I like 10 and 11 a lot. Go ahead, questions? Oh, you know what? They're talking about that next door, and they asked me, and I couldn't remember them.
Oh.
So you asked somebody this. Oh, actually, it was.
Here, I wrote them down. It was a vicarious thrill. Wait, here I have them right here. It was a restitution I will not make, a vicarious thrill, an amends I will not make, secret I will not tell.
Okay.
So it's a secret I will not tell, a resentment I will not let go of, an amends I will not make, and a vicarious thrill I'm seeking.
Any other questions?
Could you go over that then? Real compulsive overeater thing again. Those three things that you.
Yeah, it's from the book. I think I marked that page. But basically, there's two things that is a real compulsive overeater, and that is that you have to experience the phenomenon of craving, and you have to have stopped eating, dieting, and then ate one thing, and you were back in the food again. You know, the twist of the mind where you thought you could do it now because you've not done that. And that's for me, that's around the my disease, because I think that different diseases, I don't know about bulimia or people that live as anorexic. I think I was anorexic for a while, but that's my understanding. And then I always ask sponsees, are you willing to stop? Because if you can't, I don't think you can take them through the work without that. And when people binge and they come in and they call me and tell them, it's the same question. Are you willing to stop? And I've had people say, no, I've got a half a cake at home. I'm not done. I think that that's between them and their nutritionist. And I think there are people, the physiological process is that when you put an artificial sweetener in your mouth, it releases insulin. Insulin goes up, your blood sugar drops, and you get hungry. That's how some people that will turn on their phenomenon of craving, and we find that out because they'll drink something like that and they'll want to eat, and then they can't do that. Other people, it doesn't turn on their phenomenon of craving, and then it's not an issue. That's how I look at it. I think we as compulsive overeaters can be too restrictive because all of a sudden we have a bunch of things that are alcoholic foods, and there's a difference between what I binge on and what starts me binging. I was gluten free for 9 years, and I had a sponsor say, you know, I've looked at what you ate when it was a new sponsor, and he says, I don't think gluten's a problem for you. And I said, oh, really? Scared. And then he went in, he said, well, we're going to finish the steps and get all the way through, and then we'll talk about it. We did, and he said, I want you to eat a little bit of gluten every other day for a week and see what happens. Nothing happened. And now I eat gluten regularly. And so I got told when I first came in the program, because when I was binging, a loaf of bread, a half a jar of peanut butter was the meal I ate before I went to somebody's house to eat. You know, and so I thought the loaf of bread was the issue. The loaf of bread wasn't the issue. It was the sugar I'd have when I would think I could eat that sweet that wasn't at the end of a diet. And the sweet is what would take me off. And I don't drink milk for the same reason. There's too much sugar in it for me. Other people can drink milk. It's just individual. Yes.
So what do you do with a sponsor who relapses and then relapses and then relapses? How long do you hang with them, and do you start from the book in the beginning again?
I go back to the doctor's opinion, because I think there's something we missed in their alcoholic foods. And I spend a lot of time saying, what won't you give up? Because a lot of times it's something they won't give up that they haven't put down, and they're eating that, and that's an alcoholic food for them. And I give them 3 shots. And if that if at 3 shots they can't get it, they need to find a different sponsor, because God has not given me what they need. And the hardest thing for me in program is to come to the place where sponsees had the right to fail. I would chase them. I'd pick up the phone. I would text them. If they didn't do what I asked them to do, I would plead with them. And, you know, everybody has the right to die. And I'm not God. I can't do that. All I can do is ask God to take away that spiritual malady that's giving me that fear about them not working a good program. And a lot of it was about how I wanted to look. At the same time, I wanted to be the best. You know, everybody that I sponsor gets sobriety. Well, that's not true. Anything else? Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk.